everyone. Thank you again for tuning in to another episode of Women to the Front. I have Liz Sherlock here with me today. She is here to talk about her mother, Una Kroll, who was a doctor, she was a nun, a missionary, a campaigner, she was a priest, a breadwinner, she traveled, she was just all around a very cool, independent-minded woman. So thank you for speaking with me today, Liz.
Hello, hi.
If you don't mind telling me, Liz, a little bit of a biographical background of your mom. I've given a very, very brief overview, but maybe you can fill in a few details for us.
Of course. Mum was born in London, and she was born to a very unusual family. Her father was a spy, and so was her mother, in British espionage service, and were very active. Basically, My grandfather was George Hill, who was a very active spy in the First World War and worked alongside Sidney Reilly. He met my grandmother, Hilda Pediani, who was also working in the Secret Service. And George Hill was very much a ladies' man. So he met and married Hilda, and they very quickly had Una. And Una, and then, of course, my grandfather, George Hill, left for other areas. And so she had an interesting childhood. She was an only child of a single woman, which back in 1925 was unusual. She had a big group of aunts, friends, etc., and travelled around the world with them. And Mum spoke many languages and had a great respect for different cultures and different people. I think that was from staying in many different places when she was young and experiencing that. She was a very studious child. She read a lot. She was bright, naturally intelligent. And she went on to go to Cambridge, where she got a medical degree. And even then, being a woman in medicine was a battle. So she always had to stand up for her rights as a woman. Eventually, once she had her medical degree, she did decide, after speaking to people and after being involved in the church, that she wanted to give her life over to religion, and became a nun, professed nun, in a convent in Malvern. And she went out to Africa to do missionary work. She, because of her medical training, she was valuable to the mission and did a lot there to support women, particularly at time of giving birth and at time of great illnesses, and really looking at infant mortality and morbidity, public health, how to keep clean water, the basics. So to really influence change in that sort of area. She came into conflict with some of the traditional medical practices of the sort of tribal society, and that eventually led to her having a bit of a breakdown. And it was decided that she would be best to come back to England to rest and to just recuperate and think about where she would go back to. So a man called Leo Kroll, my father, was sent from the Holy Cross Order, which is a big Anglican order in America. He was American, born in Wisconsin. He was 25 years older than her and quite high up within that Holy Order, I believe. And he went to get her. They spent many hours talking, and they travelled back, stopping off in Paris. And in Paris, they decided they would get married and eloped and gave up their holy orders. This caused great ripples of agitation within the church. They were sort of almost disgraced that they could do this. And my father always had trouble finding work after that, because the reputation of what he'd done, sort of, every time he got a job, a few months later, they'd say, no, sorry, we can't take you on now. So he brought us up in many ways. While my mother did her work, was the breadwinner, medical practice, and then eventually started to become very involved in feminist movement, religion, and fight for ordination of women. And that's because she wanted to, ultimately, she wanted to be a priest. She didn't give up religion when she decided to marry, but she looked at it in a different way.
Absolutely. I think what I really like about it is that she didn't say, oh, this doesn't align with my beliefs, or this doesn't include me enough, I'm just going to walk away from it, I'm giving up. And instead, she actually just kept at it more and more and more for that reason.
Yes, exactly. And she had four very young children. I've got two older siblings and myself. We were all born within 3 years. And then my other sister 3 years later. And it's hard to bring up young children and to work full time and bring in money and to have the conviction to change how women were viewed in the church and in society. And it did require a lot of hard work and a lot of commitment to her cause, so to speak.
Yeah, and if anything, really, you know, that really kind of does, she really is walking the walk there, because it is immoral to see something wrong and to not do anything about it, if you think about it. If you see that there's some sort of hurt or suffering or discrimination or whatever happening around you, then it really is your moral obligation to actually do something about it, not just to say it's not your problem and walk away.
That's right. But you need to have that really deep-seated conviction that that's right and that's what you're fighting for. And that conviction was always with her.
Yeah, that's really inspiring. That's a really beautiful thing.
So that was sort of where she came from. She was a very independent woman, and she was very single-minded in many ways. And she knew her own mind, and she went with it.
Definitely. And so, wow.
When my eldest sister was just about, I think, 2-3 months old, and she was brought up for the first couple of years of her life there. And my brother was actually born out in Africa. I was nearly born on the boat coming home. Actually was born in London. So she had three of us within 3 years. So she had three very small children. And then there was a 3-year gap before my other sister came along. So you can imagine it was quite a busy household with lots going on. And I think that it started her on the sort of feminist approach. She always recounted a story of going to buy a washing machine, and it was on hire purchase, and they wanted my father to sign for the hire purchase. And she basically said, but I earn the money. I'm signing it. They wouldn't allow her to. And that really made her very angry. So then she started campaigning for women's rights, because they're not just a part of a man. They are an independent person and should be respected for being an independent person. So I think it was lots of things, and also the inequalities she saw both in Africa and in general practice of women and how they struggled with lives and struggled with bringing up children and all the other things they had to do, and how they didn't have equality in the workplace or in society in many ways. So that was, we're talking about 1960 to 1970, that sort of era. So that's sort of what started her off. Religion was very much a part of our lives. We did all go to church when we were young. It wasn't forced, but it was something that was always there, and we, you know, accepted all the religious practices and things. But none of us actually had her passion for it, her deeply, deeply held belief that both my mother and father had for the Christian religion. So, you know, there was some conflict there as we grew up, but we always respected what they did.
Yeah, so in that case, I think especially now, a lot of Americans in particular don't view religion as something that is particularly welcoming of women in many respects, or doesn't treat women with incredible respect or equality. So your mother's kind of attraction and dedication to the church, paired with her feminist beliefs, how did that play out? Because I understand that she was a huge feminist activist within the church as well, wasn't she?
She was. So she decided to become a deaconess. I'm not quite sure what year that was, but she decided when we were quite young. I remember her going off to the place where she was doing her training. She was the only woman amongst all the men, and it was difficult to be accepted, and it was very difficult to be accepted within the church as a woman. She was very lucky that we moved to an area and she found a church with a very forward-thinking vicar who embraced what she could bring to his church and to the congregation. So I think his influence obviously helped a little bit. And I remember many times going to church, and there was all sorts of plays going on and singing with guitars, and very, very much not the type of religion that is traditional. And that was great. And that sort of, and she wanted to encompass and get as many different types of people into the church, not just your traditional churchgoers. So she thought she wanted to become a priest, and that was her life's ambition. So she became a deaconess and then started the fight for ordination of women, and had a big group of women that also had her feelings and her thoughts. And collectively, they started to campaign for women's ordination. She stood up in synod when they voted against women being ordained and shouted out. And that was sort of a moment where she came into the public eye. And then she got contacted a lot more by people and sort of started to become a bit more political as well, and stood for parliament in our local area under a women's liberation type movement. And I remember as a child going along to meetings where we discussed things around, you know, women's rights and things. She was also very much a campaigner for equality for people of different sexualities. So that was another thing that she was very strongly for, that everybody should be embraced into a Christian religion.
And so in making more space for women, I guess, in the hierarchy of the church, was there kind of a political agenda there as well in terms of being able to influence the church's stance on these issues? Or was it more just a desire to be deeper in the religious practice and in that religious movement and have a heavier involvement as a deacon or as a priest, for example? Were these two things that she was working towards, or was it one more than the other?
It was more political. It was more for women generally, not just for herself. And in fact, she didn't become a priest for quite a long time after she would be able to become a priest, if that makes sense. So it was a fight for other women. And she did always campaign for other people. It wasn't all about herself, really.
Yeah. President Jimmy Carter recently actually wrote an article, and I think it's titled Losing My Religion. And he basically has declared that he's walked away from the Southern Baptist Church. His argument was that early Christians had female deacons and priests, bishops, apostles, prophets, all of that, basically all the way up until the 4th century. And then things really changed and the church became very patriarchal. Yeah. And his idea of walking away from the church is that he doesn't want to be a part of an institution that is so patriarchal and discriminatory against women, which obviously is a very different approach to what your mother had. Obviously, your mother got more deeply involved than anything else. I read somewhere that she converted to Catholicism in 2008, which I was actually at first really surprised to read because of the church's stance on reproductive rights and gay marriage. They take a very hard line against it. So I was wondering if you don't mind, and I don't know if you feel comfortable to share, but what do you think prompted that move into Catholicism for her?
I didn't actually ever speak to her deeply about that. I think, knowing my mother, I think it was a desire to try and influence from within. So I think that's what she did. She wanted to influence from within and felt she could. I think she liked some of the religious pomp and ceremony that goes with the Catholic religion. I think there's sort of respect for that. And I think she had a good parish nearby and a good church. But I think it was from within, she could make small changes, and from small changes come big changes. Whereas from without, there's not much you can do. So I can understand how Jimmy Carter feels, but he will lose his influence within that church in many ways by not being part of it. But it is very, very frustrating. She spent a lot of her life frustrated by how difficult everything was and how difficult it was to get people to understand that women have obviously exactly the same rights as men and should be, you know, afforded those same rights.
Yeah, it seems as though there's a real kind of effort to kind of change the Christian narrative and also narratives in other religions, not just Christianity. Dr. Willie Parker, who is a very well-known abortion provider in the United States, he's just published his new book. And in it, he says that to be an abortion provider is to be a compassionate Christian. And that it's the Christian thing to do to help women in need and to do that without judgment. So I think it's actually a really interesting thing to see people embracing religion as being actually very progressive and kind of changing, as I said before, you know, like the whole narrative of the scriptures or the Quran or anything else. So obviously this is not just an issue within the Christian church. There's issues of discrimination across all faiths, honestly. Is there an opportunity, do you think, for like cross collaboration? Do you have any advice for anyone that might want to do that? Is it possible for women in a mosque to join up with Catholic women or with Orthodox Jewish women, for example?
I mean, I feel I'm not religious. I don't have a deep Catholic conviction or a deep religious conviction. But I think that's the only way that the world can be understanding of each other's cultures, each other's ways of life, each other's norms, and to actually learn from each other and really understand. And then we to develop a kind society, because society is not as kind as it could be. And Christianity is not as kind as it could be. You know, the hatred towards certain sections because of their sexuality or because of other things that are not within the teachings of the church need to be looked at and addressed and dissected, really, to see where that comes from. And only by talking to other people can you understand their point of view and then change the point of view.
What is your opinion of the new Pope? Do you think that this is something that he's also kind of working towards in a sense, or do you think it's just kind of skimming the surface to just get by?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I think the Catholic Church do need to look at the issue of contraception very strongly, you know, to not allow women to plan their families results in women not having an equal opportunities in life, because women are not just for breeding. They need to be able to do other things, and contraception is the only way, and planned parenthood is the only way to achieve that. So I think, and also from the point of view of sexually transmitted infections as well, I think that's the one thing the Catholic Church really needs to come into the 21st century about. And then opening up dialogue with other religions, yes, by all means. I think all religions, I think, need to look again. The future is not the past, and they need to get young people involved in church. And young people are not as involved as they were 100 years ago or even 50 years ago. And the church will lose its influence if it has nobody going to it.
So if you are younger then, what do you think would be a way for young people to kind of really affect change? Like I'm thinking about, I'm Albanian Orthodox Christian, for example. I'm not even allowed to approach the altar at my church. Right. I'm not really sure what someone like me, for example, could do, especially being younger. There's not so much influence I really envision for myself.
I think collective influence. So I think meeting up with other like-minded women, trying to influence change, and trying to maybe approach and say, what's the rationale? What's the reason? How can we become more involved in the church? What can we do? The other way is militancy, but that's very difficult because that alienates in many ways. Mum was militant at times and did alienate many sections of the Christian church, I think. So I think it's a difficult one to approach, particularly with very entrenched ideas from leaders of that church. Yes. There is no simple answer.
Definitely. What do you think there is to gain, though, in our 21st century kind of mentality where people always think that there's something, what's in it for me? What do you think our society would benefit from if, for example, younger people did get more involved and did agitate the religious institutions more?
I think religion does have a place, I think, in society, and so does spirituality. I think it needs to be kept alive and present, really. So it needs to look forward, not backwards, and not stuck in its ways while retaining that. I really struggle to find the reason for the argument against women being allowed to fully participate in any organisation. But a church, Christianity is supposed to be kind, religious, compassionate, caring. And how can you exclude somebody because they're a woman. I do find that difficult. And I think that will alienate women. And by alienating women, they may not retain that within their family. So you're actually cutting off their children in many ways as well. Because like it or not, women do make decisions about where their children go and what their children do in their spare time. Men do as well and should do. Men should be much more involved in parenthood. But it does quite often fall to women to do that. And so there's that need to continue it through inclusivity.
Yeah, absolutely. So your mother really just sounds like such an amazing person. And I'm so grateful to you for sharing your experience of being raised by such an independent-minded woman, especially with such little regard for conventions, which I really admire. What do you think would be kind of the parting advice that she would impart on all of us listening, those of us who are concerned about the relationship between religion and feminism or religion and LGBTQ rights? What do you think she would say to us?
Don't give up. Keep at it. Keep fighting. Because if people hadn't, we wouldn't even have any women priests. There would be no women priests. If everybody went, this is impossible, we can't do this, nobody's listening, it wouldn't happen. No change will happen if people give up. So it's just to keep on fighting, really.
Yeah, just keep persisting.
Yeah, tenacity.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that your mother sounds like she's embodied that word through and through.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for speaking with me today, Liz. This has been a really great conversation. And I'm so amazed by the woman that your mother was. And she's definitely an inspiration to me. So thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you for talking to me.
This episode of Women to the Front was brought to you by our producer and editor, Nick Beard, technical support by Michael Madigan and Jack Darcy, and our music is by Katrin Gilbert. My name is Allison Gilbert, and I'm your host. You can find Women to the Front on iTunes. You can visit our website at womenscaucus.co.uk. We have a Women's Caucus Activist Happy Hour that happens every week, so definitely check out our website, partake in it. Maybe take a snapshot of yourself and put it on Twitter. You can tweet at us at DAUK Women Caucus, and you can check out our very cool Facebook page at DAUK Women's Caucus. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.